The Exchange podcast is sponsored by Doucette Survey, serving your professional land surveying and mapping needs in New England, now with offices in New Hampshire and Maine. Information at doucettesurvey.com. That's doucetesurvey.com.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Americans have complained about taxes since the Revolution, and New Hampshire, especially, has long been anti-tax. But actually, Granite Staters may have less to gripe about, according to a recent story by the Nashua Telegraph. Turns out we have almost the smallest tax burden in the country, about $1,800 per person last year. Just Florida and Georgia were lower. Still, the amount government collects here can feel high because it's mostly that oh-so-obvious tax on property, where the bills come regularly. The amount is clearly spelled out, and for many homeowners, it's big. For all these reasons, the property tax has been a hot political issue over the years, although recently it's died down more about tweaks than major changes. But in other states, there's a lot of discussion now about the property tax. Arguments about fairness, stability, who should pay and who shouldn't are being heard from Pennsylvania to California. Today in The Exchange, we reassess the property tax, and let's hear from you. What are the pros and cons of this tax as you see it? What taxation models do other states offer? Or should others be looking at New Hampshire as a model? Let us know what you think. Give us a call. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Post a comment on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange, all one word. We have two guests in studio. Daphne Kenyon's here, fellow at the Lincoln Institute of Land Policy, principal of D.A. Kenyon and Associates, a public finance consulting firm. She's for a long time studied the property tax. Daphne, it's nice to see you. Thank you for being here.
Well, thank you.
Also with us, Steve Norton, executive director of the New Hampshire Center for Public Policy Studies. And Steve, good to see you. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
And joining us from the D.C. area is Elaine Povich, staff writer for Stateline, who recently covered property tax debates in other states. Elaine's written three books. She teaches journalism at the University of Maryland. And Elaine, good to have you. Thanks for your time.
Happy to be here.
Well, just looking at the article you wrote, Elaine, for Stateline, which states did you include in your story? Who's looking at this and how come?
Well, I included a lot of states, but I led the piece with Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania is a place where the property tax has been controversial, kind of like New Hampshire over the years. And there have been many efforts to change it, and it's never gotten anywhere. This year, as Pennsylvania is one of those states that's sort of looking for more revenue, there is a move afoot to scrap it altogether. And unlike in previous years, it's actually getting a little bit of traction. And so I looked at that and said, I wonder if other places are having the same issues, the same discussions, and I found, in fact, they were. States like New York, Connecticut, other places are looking at the property tax and thinking, gee, it's a very nice sort of steady stream of revenue, but it's also one that taxpayers completely despise. So on the one hand, you know, it's a great source of revenue for state governments. They can depend on it. Property's not going anywhere. It's always there. And that's the problem. It's always there. And your taxpayers are getting their bills very regularly, and they're looking at their bills very regularly, and gee, gosh, golly, they're always going up. And it kind of makes people mad. So for your state lawmakers, they look at it and they say, man, everybody's upset about this. Maybe we ought to do something about it.
Well, it's
not as easy as it seems.
Yeah.
So we'll get into that as we go along.
Absolutely. And we'll get into some of the examples from other states because it is really interesting. But just picking up real quickly, Elaine, on what you said, you know, few people like taxes, but you use the word despise when it comes to the property tax. What is it about this particular tax that just really gets people going?
I think it's the immediacy of it. And look, if you look at an income tax, which I understand New Hampshire doesn't have, but in other places, you have an income tax. Basically, you make more money, you pay more tax. So you kind of look at it and you say, well, you know, had a pretty good year. Oh, all right, okay. I'll give the state, the feds, a little bit more. Property tax isn't like that. You know, you're in your house. Your house is your house. It's there. Yeah, maybe the value of it has gone up. But in fact, to you, it's the same as it ever was. And all of a sudden, here comes the tax bill, and golly gee, it's worse than it was last year. It's higher than it was last year. And you look at it and you say, well, shoot, my house hasn't changed. How come I have to pay more taxes? It's very close to the people. They see it. They can touch it. It's very tangible. And I think that's why it makes people annoyed.
Daphne Kenyon, you have looked at the property tax in New Hampshire for a long time, as I said, but you're also starting to look at this nationwide. How is the property tax different from state to state? A lot different? A little different?
It's enormously different from state to state. In some states, it does not work very well at all. And I would think that Pennsylvania and California are two of the states where it doesn't work very well. But in New Hampshire, it actually works pretty well. With all the Claremont lawsuits, there was one lawsuit that challenged the assessment practices, and that led to an improvement. But in New Hampshire, you pretty much know what you're getting. Voters do have control, and if you support local government, you have to give some grudging respect to the property tax because that supports strong local government.
So from state to state, the way it's carried out and the way people feel about it is different.
Yes. Just to give a couple of examples, if the assessment process is poor, if the state says, oh, we're assessing 100% of market value, and then local governments don't carry that out or reassess, in every 10 years or so, then it can be a mess and it can become unfair. But since New Hampshire's assessment practices are generally good, that helps make the tax more fair.
And Steve Norton, I was looking at some of the numbers yesterday in terms of how much different states rely on different taxes, including, of course, the property taxes. That's what we're talking about today. How heavily does New Hampshire rely on this as a source of state and local revenue?
Yeah, well, we rank fourth in the country. Fourth highest in the country with respect to per capita property taxes. Wyoming, New Jersey, and Connecticut are ahead of us. And that accounts for about 63% of our total local and state revenues. So it's a big chunk of change that we're using. But at the same time, we have, among the lowest tax burdens in the country, despite that fact.
So in terms of property taxes, we're up there. In terms of overall taxes, as I said in the introduction,
we're
down there.
That's right.
This is kind of also, Steve, correct me if I'm wrong, a New England thing too, right? I mean, our reliance on the property taxes is sort of ingrained in our history.
Yep. Just as in some parts of the country, counties are a big deal. In the Northeast, towns are a big deal. And the value and policy were often driven at that town level. And so the taxation was very local.
And as I travel around the country, Steve, people sometimes say, wow, why don't you have an income tax or a sales tax in New Hampshire? And I just say, well, it's just part of our tradition, our history. It isn't how most states operate. Why do you suppose New Hampshire stayed this way when other states started expanding their bases from that sort of agrarian past here in New England?
Well, I think one potential reason is that we have an amazing asset, which is people come here and build houses and we tax them. And that doesn't exist in every place. But I think there's also generated in the 50s and 60s and 70s a real active antagonism to broad-based taxes. Even though we do have an income tax in the state, in the interest and dividends tax, for example.
Right.
No broad-based tax.
Our phone number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Let's get you involved in our conversation. We're talking about property taxes once again today in the exchange. Let's hear from you, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. You can post a comment there if you like. What taxation models do you see other states offering? What are the pros and cons of the property tax? Should other states be looking at New Hampshire's unique tax structure as a model? Let us know what you think. Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. So, Elaine, in states with other taxes, sales, income, how often do they see their property taxes being reduced or eliminated? Because, that's sometimes been the argument. Let's increase income taxes, let's increase sales taxes, and then guess what? Homeowners will reduce your property taxes. How often does that really happen?
Basically, it doesn't. The problem is that, you know, if you look at it from one side or the other, somebody's ox is being gored here. So if you can reduce the property tax in a state, but you still want to maintain the same services, in general, either your sales tax or your income tax or your corporate tax, something's going to go up, which produces opponents to the action, which produces lobbying in state legislatures, and 9 times out of 10, it doesn't get anywhere. New York is a bit of an exception. This year, Andrew Cuomo, the Democratic governor of New York, and the legislature basically agreed to $1.5 billion, that's billion with a B, in property tax relief. Now, remember, New York's a big state, got a lot of property, got a lot of property taxes, and just like in New Hampshire and other places, New York taxpayers have been complaining about the property tax forever. As you pointed out, it is the tax that is tied to localities. In New York, it's counties and other municipalities. So the deal they made in New York was, okay, we're going to cut your property taxes by $1.5 billion, but here's the deal. The towns, municipalities, cities, and counties have got to get together and find a way to make commensurate savings. So they've, in order to cut the property taxes locally, they've got to come together and say, okay, we can combine fire and ambulance services in Tompkins County and Ithaca and Cortland and the other towns around. They're all going to combine with us. And by doing this and setting up, I don't know, regional fire stations or regional responses, we can save X amount of money. If they hit their target, then they can reduce their property tax.
So there's some real pressure
There is real pressure on the towns and on the town politicians, but it just points out, as you were mentioning before, how tied to the local politicians and the local economy property taxes are.
Go ahead, Steve.
We have one experience in New Hampshire in which we had a lawsuit around education, and the state was required to increase its spending to local communities and put about $400 million into local communities. And in essence, what happened is the communities lowered their property taxes one time, and that was it. So there was a one-time windfall, and then they just continued rising as they'd been rising in the past.
So there's a lot of sort of, I don't want to call it a shell game, but that's sort of moving one pot around and another one. All right, we will start taking your calls after a short break. Lots of folks who want to jump in our conversation. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Post a comment on our Facebook page. It's NHPR Exchange, all one word, or give us a call. Again, it's 1-800-892-6477. We're talking property taxes on the exchange. More in a moment. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're reassessing the property tax, both here in New Hampshire and around the country. Let's hear from you, 1-800-892-6477. As we're hearing, although the property tax debate has been pretty quiet in New Hampshire recently, it's getting pretty hot around the country. One of our guests has written a story about the property tax arguments going on in states around the country, from New York to California. Join us, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Elaine Povich joins us from D.C. She's a staff writer for Stateline, who recently covered property taxes. With me in studio, Steve Norton with the New Hampshire Center for Public Policy Studies and Daphne Kenyon, fellow at the Lincoln Institute of Land Policy. And all of you, let's go to the phones. And Joseph's calling from Litchfield. Hi, Joseph. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Oh, good morning.
Morning.
As I mentioned to the screener, we've got our property tax bill, and it's two-thirds of it is going to the schools. My wife and I are retired and semi-retired, and we just think it's unfair. We don't have children in school.
So you feel like you shouldn't have to pay so much of a school tax because you don't have an income coming in and you don't have kids in school.
Correct. I mean, I'd be willing to go with a flat tax or a sales tax or something else to contribute. I'm not trying to evade the taxes, but it's just a huge hit to us.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Joseph, and let me ask you a question if I could, okay? And I'm not picking on you, Joseph. I just want to give you another side, all right?
Sure. Yep.
So this comes up a lot, and a lot of people feel the way you do. But then somebody said on the show a while back, okay, younger people are less likely to use town ambulance services. So maybe younger people kind of resent having to pay for town ambulance. So what do you think of that?
Uh, that, pay for what you use, as I think would be a lot fairer.
Okay.
If I need an ambulance, and either I have or don't have insurance, that would be my responsibility. But, you know, let's divide it up.
All right. Joseph, thanks a lot for calling in. Go ahead, Daphne.
I don't have any children in school either. I live in Windham, which has good schools. But when I pay my property tax, which, Joseph, like you, mostly goes to schools, I think, oh, the good schools in Windham contribute to the value of my house. And at some point, I'm going to sell my house. And the better the schools are, the more my house is worth. If you look at Zillow.com, they will rate schools, and you'll see that that's taken into account in the value of your house. And if you're like many people, the value of your house is one of your biggest assets. So I would argue, you know, think about that.
We do hear this from people, though, who say, look, I don't have kids. Why should I pay?
Well, I did have a child that was educated in K through 12 in Windham. And so, you know, I paid property tax then. I'm paying it now. In some ways, you need to look at it over your lifetime.
In terms of business climate, business environment, what do we know, Steve, about school quality and how much it attracts economic activity in a town?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, a town that has better schools will attract a higher educated population, and those people tend to have higher wages and purchase things and create economic activity, both in terms of the jobs they have and the money that they spend. I'll give you a great example of this. Paula Blank at SNHU, a great university now that's doing a lot of online work, is really trying to attract people to Manchester. And he's having trouble getting executives to stay in Manchester because the schools are not ranked as well as the schools outside of Manchester. And so they're going to places like Bedford, where the schools are rated somewhat higher. So that's a real-life example of what Daphne just said, and most economists would agree.
Interesting. So he's trying to attract top-notch talent to his expanding, impressive university, and people don't want to settle in Manchester.
Yep.
Interesting. You know, he's a retiree, Elaine Povich, and you wrote in your story about the real pressures that retirees feel. They're on fixed incomes, and as you said earlier, the property tax, you know, keeps going up in most places. Talk about the role that the concerns of retirees plays in this property tax debate.
Well, economically, you're absolutely right. They're on fixed incomes, and they see their property taxes going up. There's another side to this, too, and this is one that affects state lawmakers, of course, and that is that retirees vote. If you look at the statistics on who votes, retirees vote in higher numbers. Hey, they have more time. They're more politically active. They volunteer. They do the moral equivalent of stuffing envelopes. They're very politically plugged in. So they become a political force as well as an economic force. And when you combine the two of those, you get a very powerful influence on state legislatures. I should take a minute to talk about the caller's point about only paying for services you use. The tax system in this country is not set up that way. When I pay my federal income tax, I would very much like to say, hey, I'd like all my money to go to national parks, and you can keep your F-16s, okay? I don't want to pay for those. I want to pay for national parks. It just doesn't work that way, because if we get to pick and choose what services we're funding and what services we're not, of course we're going to pick the ones we use, and of course we're going to neglect the ones we don't. And if you have a taxation system that's based on a broad spectrum of interests and a broad spectrum of revenue, it is incumbent upon the politicians and the people who run the government to decide how much of that money goes where.
Well, and Joseph, I appreciate the call and the point, because Daphne Kenyon, you do often hear that people are worried about retirees losing their homes, you know, being kicked out because they're on that fixed income and they can't afford the ever-rising property taxes.
So people who are really struggling should make sure that they're taking advantage of the property tax relief that is offered in New Hampshire.
Circuit breakers. When you're really low income, you can apply for relief.
Yeah. Much of the relief is offered at the town level, which is not that generous. But there is also a thing that we call circuit breakers, but in New Hampshire is called low and moderate income homeowners property tax relief. You can find it online, and it rebates your state property tax to some degree. So oftentimes these programs, maybe 40% of the people who are eligible use it. So
really?
Yeah. you know, it's just there's trouble getting the word out, and New Hampshire doesn't have a big marketing thing for it. So by all means, check to see if you're eligible.
Steve Norton, how much relief is there for people who are truly struggling?
Yeah, there are a number of different programs. There are programs for veterans. There are programs for the blind and disabled. There are programs for the elderly, all the folks that you would think of being on a fixed income in some way. And just to give you an example, back in 2008, there were about 12,000 elderly folks who got an exemption from their property tax. And the way that works is, depending on your age and your income, a certain amount of your property assessed value is exempted from the calculation of the tax. And it amounted to about $25 million of exemptions to people. Now, that varies by community. The state requires a minimum level, and a place like Portsmouth has higher exemptions because the value of homes is higher. A place like Pittsfield has exemptions as well, but they tend to be lower. So total local control. Each individual community can make a decision about how much it wants to exempt for the elderly or for any of those different credits.
All right. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Steve, you said the word exemption, and that reminded me of another piece in your story, Elaine Povich, that was so interesting. And we've heard this here in New Hampshire, too. The exemption for nonprofits. In general, nonprofits, including NHPR, are exempt from property taxes. There's been a move afoot, Elaine, in other states to bring some large nonprofits, at least, back onto the tax rolls. Tell us about that.
Sure. Let me give you an example. In Connecticut, they had a bill in the legislature that would have added nonprofit entities to the property tax rolls. That meant universities, that meant public radio stations, that meant churches, that meant a lot of very popular nonprofits would have had to pay property taxes. Sounds like a pretty good idea when you look at Connecticut, for example, has a number of very prosperous universities, both public and private, and their facilities are exempt from the property tax. So on paper, it looked like a great idea. Terrific. Let's, you know, tax all these wonderful buildings that are at the University of Connecticut. Well, not surprisingly, the academic community rose up as one, and in a fury that was heard from the state capitol at Hartford, I suspect all the way across the country, they said, no, please do not do this. And it's a very powerful influence on the legislatures, and they didn't get the bill passed. It's not uncommon to see lawmakers in states that are having budget difficulties, and there are some looking for other things to tax. They're looking to bring into the tax rolls some of these places that are exempt. It's a very difficult thing to do politically, and it's because I think that these entities have enjoyed their tax-exempt status for so long that they've built their budgets around it. They've built their financial statements around it. They've built their entire financial footing on the fact that they don't have to pay these property taxes. It would be a tremendous dislocation to them. Some states are trying to do it a little bit piecemeal, only certain properties like recreational facilities and that sort of thing. On the other hand, other states like West Virginia are moving to exempt from property taxes recreational facilities on the grounds that all these whitewater rafting camps in West Virginia attract tourism. Tourists spend money, so we get money other places.
That's really interesting.
It's a balancing act. It truly is.
Daphne, go ahead, jump in. We had an effort here in New Hampshire this year, a bill by Republican Rep. David Hess, who wanted to tax large nonprofits, not the soup kitchen or the homeless shelter, but big universities and hospitals.
Yeah, what I would support instead of outright taxation of nonprofits is expansion of voluntary payments by nonprofits, which are called payments in lieu of taxes or pilots.
Right.
And there are some of those in New Hampshire. Dartmouth Hitchcock, for example, makes a good size payment to Lebanon, New Hampshire. And it tends to be more appropriate when the nonprofit is large, it has some cash, it has a big impact on the community. And you might have heard about Providence, Rhode Island, not too far from here, but they made a big push to expand pilots. And Brown University hadn't been paying that much before. Providence was having enormous financial troubles. And Brown stepped up to the plate and said, yes, over the next decade, we will pay X number of dollars more.
So please don't put this new tax in place, but we'll give you a little bit more of that
payment. Well, I think it'd be so hard to tax tax-exempt entities, because remember, churches are part of them, and they've had that since the beginning of the property tax.
All right. Here's an email. This came in from Sarah in Freedom. Steve, I'll throw this to you. She says, property tax makes a lot of sense to me as we expect our government to protect that property and often provide related services like schools, library, etc. Sarah says property tax is straightforward and simple and if done right, makes sense. She says, I think the frustration comes from, one, the appraisal process, and two, the complexity of the tax code. She ends by saying, by the way, she's in favor of a sales tax. She abhors the income tax because it has a negative impact on earnings and activities, Sarah says, should be promoted. Sarah, thank you for that email. What do you think about this? She likes the property tax, but the way that it's carried out is where some of the frustration comes from.
Well, New Hampshire is actually a state that does a pretty darn good job of it. Most of the concerns that people have reflect the valuation of the property.
And the city says it's worth a lot more than you think it is.
Yeah, of course. And remember, there was a fairly strong debate recently about the view tax in New Hampshire. And if you think about it, if you've got a good view, why wouldn't that value be more than a one that doesn't have a good view?
So it makes sense. Because when you sell the home, your home's going to sell for more because
you have
this beautiful view of a mountain.
That's right. So all of a sudden we're having a conversation about the view tax. And that's, I think, the assessment question more than anything else. With respect to the property tax being locally controlled, I think everyone agrees that the closer you are to the money, the easier, the more likely it is that you'll control it in some fashion. And you can certainly see that in New Hampshire.
Again, our number 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Sarah, thanks for that one. And let's go back to the phones. Josh is calling in from Concord. Hey, Josh, you're on the exchange. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Good. I just had a question for the panel regarding the view tax, actually. I was thinking that it's kind of like double taxation, isn't it? Because the property with a good view is already worth more money to begin with, so it's going to be taxed for that increased value. So adding an extra view tax to it is sort of double taxing that that asset.
And Josh, do you have a nice view? I'm just curious.
I don't. I just thought I don't actually. I just thought that I was just against it when they implemented it a couple of years ago, and I just thought that it was really kind of unfair.
Okay.
So I just wonder if you guys speak to that, and I'll take my answer off the air.
Sure. Thanks for calling, Steve. You want to jump in first, and then Daphne.
The New Hampshire Assessing Standards Board has held that view is just one of many different factors that are a part of an assessment. And if you can think of it as a list of items, access to water, view, good soils, good trees, beautiful building, all those things are checked off in the assessment process and then are essentially used in developing how much the property is valued at.
Daphne, go ahead, and then I have another question for you, Elaine.
The quick thing is that there's no separate view tax, and that's where the name misleads people. But as Steve says, the view is one of many factors taken into account for the property tax that you pay.
I want to raise another topic that, Elaine, you raised in your story, and this is the idea of property tax caps. Again, people feel frustrated. They feel like their incomes aren't going up, and yet the property taxes are ever going up. What about efforts, Elaine, elsewhere in the country to limit property taxes through these tax caps? For example, you covered California's famous Prop 13. What's happening with Prop 13 now, Elaine?
Prop 13 was probably the pioneer in tax caps, and California implemented it in 1978. And quite soon after that, the localities began to realize, while it was a great political move, it kind of put them in a bind budgetarily because, hello, they're not getting any more revenue, even though the cost of services is still going up. So they came up with a workaround, or you can say a loophole, depending on how you look at it. They had something called the parcel tax. Not the property tax, the parcel tax. It's sort of like the semantic question over the view as opposed to, you know, how many outbuildings you have. So they came up with a parcel tax, which allowed the localities to tax the parcel on which the property sat. And in essence, basically, it allowed them to tax the piece of land, and it was limited to businesses mostly. It was thrown out at one point by the courts. They've had a back and forth over it ever since then, because as you can well imagine, the localities are now depending on that income. And the state senate out in California passed a bill to restore the localities' ability to level the parcel taxes, and it's based on something called land classification, commercial, residential, or industrial. And so they're in the middle of fighting to get this parcel tax back. But what it points out overall is a bit of the folly of capping these taxes, because when you do that, you either have to, you know, cut a fire engine, or you got to find some other way to make the money back.
So a parcel isn't property. We're getting really, it's kind of Orwellian, isn't it, Elaine? I mean,
it's like a view isn't land.
Steve?
New Hampshire hasn't had the caps on the property tax, but have put in spending caps, towns have. And what they've discovered is that what happens then is that there's more pressure on the local property tax, you know, because they lose a fire engine and they want something and they have to go only to the property tax for that.
So a couple years back, there was sort of a tax cap movement in New Hampshire,
yeah, it
right,
was mostly
Steve?
It was a spending cap. So Manchester was a city that was, I think both mayors, the current and then former mayor were informed. Then there was a large debate and a question about whether cities and towns constitutionally could do that.
That's right. I remember that. Yeah, definitely. But the use of tax caps here in New Hampshire or around the country.
Yeah, New Hampshire is very unusual in not having a state tax caps or limits on growth of assessed values. So 45 states have limits on property tax rates or levies. And 19 states, like California, have limits on rate of growth of assessed value. But statewide, New Hampshire has none of it.
So 45 states have some kind of limit on property taxes.
Yes.
On the other hand, they don't have limits on their income or sales taxes, I'm guessing.
Well, some do, some don't.
All right.
But they have those taxes.
We will take a lot more of your calls, emails, Facebook comments after a short break. More on property taxes, both here in the Granite State and nationwide. Stay with us. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow in The Exchange, it's our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup. Today in The Exchange, the property tax debate in New Hampshire and, as we're hearing, around the country. Join us with your questions and comments. What are the pros and cons of the property tax, in your opinion? What taxation models do other states offer that you're familiar with? Or should other states be looking at New Hampshire's unique taxation system as a model? Let us know what you think. The Exchange number is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. And Daphne Kenyon, Steve Norton, Elaine Povich, let's go right back to our callers. John's waiting in Colebrook. Hi, John. You're on The Exchange. Go ahead.
Good morning, Laura. I just wanted to say something about what I think is a great facet of New Hampshire's taxation system, and that is the current use tax, meaning that you get taxed on what your property is actually being used for rather than its value as house lots or commercial buildings. I'm probably a good example of a guy who could not live on the farm that I run. I would be out of here if it was taxed on its value in a commercial sense. Instead, I'm taxed on what I'm using the land for, which is farming and logging. So that's New Hampshire led the way, by the way, on this approach. And I think 26 states now have this form of taxation assessment, as actually the correct term, based on New Hampshire's pioneering law.
Yeah, this has been around for what, 20 years, John? 30 years?
Yeah, just about, I think 20 years. And it gets tweaked here and there, but only to make it fairer. You know, without this wonderful outlook on keeping land, wild and in production, New Hampshire would, you know, a lot of these lands would have been carved up and sold because the owners simply couldn't afford to own them.
Okay, John, thanks for calling. Steve Norton, let's just remind people what this is. We haven't talked about this on the show in a long time.
So towns are allowed to put pieces of property into current use exemptions. So if it's being used for the purposes of logging, as John said, or farming, it gets taxed in a different way, and generally a much lower way. And 100% of the towns in New Hampshire have current use exemptions. Towns use other exemptions to encourage activity as well. For example, and I'd forgotten this till recently, that there are 20% of New Hampshire towns provide exemptions for houses with solar power.
Really?
And 6% for wood heating. So property taxes can be used to help people who are on fixed incomes. It can also be encouraged or encourage particular types of behavior. And in other parts of the country, I think businesses are, in some cases are exempted from property taxes to encourage business development. And I'm sure that Elaine or Daphne know more about that than I.
Yeah. And go ahead, Daphne, and then Elaine, I have another question for you. Current use has been popular but also controversial in New Hampshire, Daphne. Some people say, hey, it's what makes New Hampshire so beautiful. There's all this open forest and farmland and so forth. But other people feel like it's kind of unfair.
Well, part of the issue is it's been so popular. Richard England reports in a recent book out of the Lincoln Institute that 51% of land in New Hampshire is in current use.
51%?
I was astounded. And so whenever you give some incentive for a particular use, you have to also think about, are you giving away the tax base? Because when you give to one person, someone else has to pay the bill.
I see. So if the farmer down the street has a great, and listen, I love local farmers, I'm not picking on anybody, but if he or she has a big exemption because of that farm, and meanwhile I'm paying full freight on my house in downtown Concord.
Yeah, part of the reason for that big number is that a lot of that current use is in very low populated areas where the value of that property wouldn't be high anyways for commercial purposes. So, you know, in a place like COAS, you know, an enormous amount of their community is in current use, and it still only represents about 6% of the commercial residential assessed value.
All right. Well, John, glad you raised that point. That's a subject we haven't talked about in a couple years, and it's real interesting. As we look at property taxes for businesses, Elaine, we've mostly talked about homeowners, but you also cover the property tax issue in terms of businesses, and certainly they pay property taxes too. Now, what's sort of the tone of the debate there, Elaine?
Businesses in general pay very large property taxes, actually, depending on, like your caller pointed out, the use of the land, which is commercial, profit-making, et cetera, depending on the state. And yet, businesses also take advantage in many places of loopholes in the law. I wrote about one in particular in Texas, which allowed businesses to appeal their assessments. Now, in most places, anyone can appeal their assessment. But in Texas, there was a quirk in the law that said you could appeal your assessment based on what they called comparable property. What that meant basically was that if you had the biggest, most beautiful hotel in downtown San Antonio, you could appeal your assessment based on what the Motel 6 was paying outside of town.
Really?
Really. And the legislature was under some pressure to change this, as you can imagine. And some of the state assessors, the county assessors, were like, this is ridiculous. They're winning all these appeals. The judges are siding with Marriott. And it's obvious that there's no comparison between it and Motel 6. The legislature did look at the appeals process in their last session in Texas. They did not eliminate the appeals altogether, but they did take a baby step, and they said, well, we'll have binding arbitration in some of these cases. So that one is still going on in Texas, indeed, to this day.
Elaine, are most of the property tax debates that you covered about homeowners, not businesses? Because as you said, they do pay a lot in property taxes.
They do, and I think businesses tend to view the property taxes as a cost of doing business. And again, businesses can do something that homeowners can't. You know, if they're selling cars, well, they'll just, you know, take the price of a car up a few dollars, and that'll cover their property tax. It's not unusual at all. Your homeowners, especially those, as we talked about, on fixed incomes, are like, hey, I can't get any more money here. So your homeowners tend to be your more vocal group when it comes to property taxes.
Okay, let's take another call. This is Steve in Nashua. Hi, Steve. You're on the Exchange. Thanks for waiting.
Hi, no problem. Thanks for taking my call. So with the unemployment crisis that we had a few years ago, I know New Hampshire was really lucky. I think we were in the 5%, but there were other states where it was much higher. I'm curious how your panel thinks the state would fare being so reliant on property taxes if we had a huge population of the state that couldn't afford to pay them because they lost their job.
Right. That's a good point. And even though you lose your job, Steve, you still have to pay the property tax, right? Unlike an income tax, you lose your job, no more income, no more tax. Thanks for the question. Daphne Kenyon, do you want to jump in there?
Well, first, I've long thought that New Hampshire should expand its property tax relief because that's a perfect example of when you need property tax relief. You lose your job, you have no income, and particularly for two-income couples, you know, they're in the soup. But I think there also is an expansion of reverse mortgages. We haven't talked about that yet. But when I watch TV at night, I see, I think, Fred Thompson advertising these all the time. And, you know, I think that they are a good idea that you can draw on the equity you already have in your house at some point. But, you know, New Hampshire is pretty stingy in its overall property tax relief compared to many states.
Thanks again for the call, Steve. And here's a Facebook comment that came in. It gets to Steve Norton's comment earlier about property taxes being used as a tool of public policy, whether to encourage solar homes or open space. James writes on our Facebook page, property taxes end up creating a bias for policy, which is pro-home ownership, at a time when people are less and less interested in owning homes. Governance should reflect its population. If you live in a New Hampshire downtown or city, you end up with a considerable mismatch between urban preference and policy. I'd love to just talk to everybody about that. Elaine, how about you?
Well, you can start with the federal tax code, okay? The federal tax code has decided, for better or worse, that home ownership is something that they want to encourage. So you have the mortgage tax deduction. It's firmly entrenched in the United States and most states' tax codes. It is perceived as something of a benefit to homeowners, and that's something that the government wants to encourage. You can like it or love it. It's the way it is. I've been involved in many debates over whether the home mortgage tax exemption should in fact be part of the tax code. I think that's a debate for another day, but it certainly is a big issue, and it's a huge drain on the tax revenue that states and the federal government bring in.
And Steve Norton, you know, James, who wrote this comment on Facebook, says property taxes end up creating a bias for pro home ownership. Could you argue the other side, though, that they're so high in New Hampshire that they kind of discourage people?
They discourage.
From...
But, you know, don't forget every renter pays some portion of the property tax. They're just paying it through their rent.
There's a little pass through there.
That's right, as opposed to, you know, getting a bill every quarter. So, you know, I think probably it discourages home ownership more than it encourages home ownership.
Yeah. Daphne, do you want to jump in there?
I think that's correct.
Yeah. You know, I have a political question. I'll throw it at you, Steve, even though I know you're an economist and a numbers guy. It has been quite a while in New Hampshire since we talked about property taxes are, you know, too big a burden. They're too high. Let's replace it with an income or sales tax. Mm-hmm. But you remember as well as I do, you know, a decade ago, this was the topic. There were blue ribbon commissions. There were candidates. There were studies. Yep. We did a million shows in the exchange. What happened to that debate?
The crisis went away. And it's interesting to think about during this past recessionary cycle, the state downshifted quite a lot of the expenses that they had taken on to local communities. And there was an outcry about that. But there's a general recognition that everyone was going to take a budgetary beating during this time period because revenues were going down so much. I will not be surprised if, when revenues come back, if they do with any sort of acceleration, that we'll begin to have those conversations again, because inexorably the property tax has gone up even during the recession, whereas a lot of our tax revenues went down.
All right. Here's an email that came in. Person didn't give their name, but this person says, great show. Not surprising that you've already had callers griping about having to pay their taxes. Older New Hampshire residents are traditionally like that. This person says, I went through Hollis Public Schools, but when it was time for my own kids to go to school, I moved over the border to Vermont, where the tax structure is more diversified. This person says, it's crazy not to have a state income tax. Thank you to this person for emailing in. Moving over to the border to Vermont, where the tax structure is more diversified, Daphne Kenyon, they've got a lot of taxes in Vermont.
They do. And actually, they do have a lot of tax challenges, too. they have basically, the state has basically taken over the property tax in Vermont, and they have incredibly high spending per pupil. And so one of their challenges is how to make government more efficient. When I was in Vermont recently, I talked to somebody on the State Board of Education, and in his small town, he said, we have our own school, our own elementary school, but we have 51 dog licenses and we have 13 kids. And, you know, they have incredibly small schools there. So, you know, they have plenty of challenges themselves.
Although, you know, perhaps those are good schools. I mean, it is shown
that small
classrooms are good for kids to learn and they get more attention.
They are good, but they're paying a lot per pupil.
Okay, well, thanks again to that person for the email. Here's another one from Pat who says, while I too wish taxes to be fair, wish to see tax dollars used more wisely, I am surprised at the strength of feeling against taxes in general here. Is there no sense of community? Do people not feel that a healthy, well-educated population is good for the community and the country? Does live free or die really mean I'm all right, Jack, too bad for you? Or is it just that people don't trust their government to spend the tax revenues to benefit the populace at large? This is a big question. Trust in government. Will the money be used wisely? I'm going to turn to Elaine Povich first and see what sorts of sentiment she heard, Elaine, when you were covering other states. Do people feel like, I don't mind paying if I feel like it's going to be used in the right way?
I think that's true. One thing about the property tax in particular is that it's very close to the people. You pay your property taxes. For better or worse, you see your schools. You may be unhappy with it because you don't have children in the school. You may be happy with it because you do have children in the school and they're good schools or they're not good schools. But regardless, you see the effects of that tax. If the ambulance shows up at your house when you need it, then you look at it and you say, wow, that's close to me. I can see the results of my taxes. I think the further away you get from that, the more distrust there is. There's a huge distrust of the federal government, and we can certainly debate why that is. My argument is it has a lot to do with Congress, but that's just because I'm here in D.C. But, you know, people look at that and they say, I'm sending all this money to the federal government, and I don't trust them to make any kind of decision. They look at their property tax, and although they may not like it, they can certainly call up the town selectman and say, hey, I don't like my property taxes, okay? Listen to me. So the ones that are very close to the people have a tendency to be viewed at least as something you can put your fingers on, you can touch, you can feel, and you understand it.
Steve, on the trust issue, I remember years back when there were bills being debated about imposing a small income tax here in New Hampshire. And the promise was, if we impose this small income tax, we will use the proceeds in part to lower property taxes. And a lot of people said, I don't trust that you'll do that.
Yeah, well, and there certainly have been instances where the legislature has said we're going to do something and then walk away from that obligation. So I think there's good reason to question what a future legislature would do, not necessarily a given legislature.
So the income tax never went forward, as we all know, the end of the story. But people would often point to other states like New Jersey, and they would say, well, in New Jersey, they promised to do that, and it didn't happen.
That's right, and everything just inexorably went up.
Well, I think an important thing to keep in mind is that there's government and there's government, and some works better than others. There was a recent study about corruption in state government, which ranked the 50 states, and New Hampshire came in the bottom 10 in terms of corruption, but places like Illinois and Louisiana came into the top 10. So, you know, it depends on your state, and it depends, as Elaine said, on the level of government. And part of why I'm such a fan of local government is you can see what you get, you can participate, you can walk to town hall and talk to people.
All right. Well, Pat, thanks for the email, because the trust issue is kind of playing out in this whole conversation. You know, Daphne Kenyon, last question for you, if I could, please. Now, we've talked a lot about other states, and you and Steve have talked about New Hampshire, but you're working on a study, from what I understand, about taxes across the country.
Yes. Well, we have a database right now of property taxes in all the 50 states. But what I'm working on is narratives for each of the 50 states that describes what's special about that state. So when I go to work, I'll read about Colorado, Georgia, and so forth. So in a few months' time, we'll have it up.
So you're studying property taxes in all 50 states and how it works and how sometimes it works better than others.
And it's special. It's different in each state.
All right. Well, we'll look forward to seeing that. Daphne Kenyon, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Daphne Kenyon is a fellow at the Lincoln Land Institute of Land Policy, principal of D.A. Kenyon & Associates, a public finance consulting firm. Elaine Povich, it was great to have you on the show. Thank you very much for being here.
Really, really happy to be here.
Elaine Povich, staff writer for Stateline, who recently covered property taxes. She teaches journalism at the University of Maryland. Steve Norton, always a pleasure. Thanks for your time.
Thanks for having me.
Steve Norton, executive director of the New Hampshire Center for Public Policy Studies. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Ross Boyd. Our producers are Ellen Grimm and Faith Meixel. Our volunteer is Alan Cohen. Our intern is James Pouliot. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Canoy.